You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. And this is Kid Dark Against the Machine. Chapter 7, Speech Balloons. Along with killer dress sense and dubious morals, the thing that most supervillains have in common? They like the sound of their own voice. Sure, there are heroes who like to banter, and even a few who pull out the portentous monologue on special occasions, when they have something particularly pompous to express, not looking at anyone in particular, former original Solar Dude. But a comic full of villains is always going to have a lot more speech balloons in it than one full of heroes. You get what I'm saying? It's not that they're smarter than us. That really can't be true, not with how often we beat them. Or that they even have more to say. But with the exception of Frighteno the Mad Mime, I didn't make that one up, look up his Wikipedia page if you don't believe me, villainy is an audible medium. If they could figure out how to harness the power of speech, none of them would need to rob banks or build doomsday devices. Which is why, on the whole, you don't see supervillain team-ups most of the time. They'd be so busy monologuing at each other, they'd never get anything done. J. Jupiter, the Kid Dark story. So, as it turned out, the supervillains didn't have an automated lottery to decide which of them got to play every 6 months. They decided it for themselves via informal debate. Yeah, it was chaos. An assortment of new candidates and classic all-stars filled the Cave of Wonders, so busy arguing with each other that none of them noticed Griff swinging down to the ground and crawling in behind the giant platinum sphere of villainous destiny. He had panels to remove, wires to cut, damage to do. Many of the villains were using PowerPoint presentations, wall charts and spreadsheets to argue their worth. Turns out Liam would have fit in well with them after all. Maybe Griff might have followed that thought through to its logical extension if he wasn't so busy with his spanners. Only, hadn't he cut that green wire 5 minutes ago? It looked fine now. And that motherboard, he knew he'd removed half the switches, but they appeared to be repairing themselves. Oh, shit. As this realization dawned over him, he heard his name being spoken aloud by someone with a microphone. Not Griff. The other name. The famous one. Liam had the audience in the palm of his hand. The kid had found a spot of upper ground from which to pronounce his villainous intentions. He had a lapel microphone which shut out every other electronic device in the cave, so only his melodious 12-year-old squawk came out of the massive speakers. He was also wearing a child-sized lab coat and a bow tie. He had come prepared. Griff caught sight of Danny. She was pinned to the ground by what looked like all the henchmen. He counted at least 12 in the scrum. She hadn't gone quietly when the kid made his move. For decades, you've all been subservient to this box of tricks, this dread machine, and the limitations it enforces upon the world of heroes and villains, Liam was saying. But no more. I have a plan to ensure that we no longer have to limit ourselves in our bid to take over the world, but can rightfully compete as the titans we are. Let the heroes restrict themselves to a finite number, while we pour over the world as a multitudinous powerhouse. What do you have in mind, Squirt? Yelled one of the Dr. Carbons, the female one with the scorched lab coat.
Simple,
said Liam, his face shining with evangelical, maniacal glee. We'll destroy the hold that the villain machine has over us by placing a hero inside its workings. A hero who never surrendered the gifts given to him by the superhero lottery. We shall feed J. Jupiter to the machine of ultimate evil. And in the confusion this causes to the programming, we shall finally take control. It would be wrong to punch a 12-year-old in the face. And yet, Griff stepped back behind the machine, too late to avoid being spotted. Swarmed by a sea of mad scientists, sinister barons and lycra-clad tricksters, he was caught quickly and manhandled towards the platinum sphere. To recap, Liam was villain the kid. Danny had been brought down by a surfeit of henchmen, and there was only so far acrobatics could get you when you had 20 or so wannabe supervillains hanging to your limbs. Oh, and Liam was still fucking talking. Griff turned his head helplessly towards the pile of henchmen. He could only see Danny's hair and part of her hand. She wasn't going to be saving the day anytime soon. Neither was Griff, to be fair. When all seemed lost, there was a whistle. It didn't come from Danny, who was down for the count, and it sure as hell didn't come from still fucking talking Junior Professor Evil Pants over there. It came from one of the bogus bush rangers. There were 8 of them in all, but the one who'd whistled looked kind of familiar once you got past the dubious beard and the domino mask, and was that the hero formerly known as Buckshot? Of course Danny wouldn't come here with just Griff and the kid. Of course she had an escape plan up her sleeve. She was always the smart one. She and Buckshot had a thing back in the day. Of course they were still in touch. Backup plan. Escape. Rescue. That meant... Oh. Fuck. Griff ducked his head as the ceiling of the cave exploded in a haze of fierce, super-powered sunshine, with rubble and dust falling down around all of their heads. It meant heroes. It meant them. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates, follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.